From the yeehaws
to the yayhoos
and everything in between,
this podcast is for you.
In this episode, we sit down with William Ball and get to speak with him about his great mare, Red as Hell. They started off this year strong with a BFA Super Stakes win, and we get a chat about moments leading up to that and how she came to be. And in this episode, we also sit down and speak with Morgan and Reagan Henning. If you guys know anything about them, they took the barrel racing world by storm as little girls, and now they are adults training horses, and we get to speak with them about their programs and learn a little bit more. So take a listen.
Hey guys, we're finally back. It's been a few weeks, but we have some really exciting guests for you. We have Morgan and Reagan Henning and William Ball. We're here at the Panty Raid, and William had a good weekend, so yep. We're excited to talk to you guys.
Yep. Yeah, I had a really good weekend. Everything, it's really fun when everything seems to work out, so.
Yes, for sure.
Worked out a couple times this year for you.
Yeah, it has.
So I guess we should say that we are at the Panty Raid right now. William won the average for the futurity, and you won the go-round today and
yesterday,
right?
No, he won yesterday.
Oh, you won yesterday. Okay.
Yeah. You were second today?
No, right? I rode pretty conservative today.
Well, it worked out. Yeah. Anyways, he won the big important thing. He was the average champion here, so. That was really exciting. I guess start off, William, with kind of how you got into horses and a little bit of your background.
Yeah, sure. Well, I don't know any different. I was raised growing up with horses. My mom rode. My mom always kind of had client horses, and just as far back as I can remember, that's, you know, what was going on. And I almost had no choice but to go to horse shows because that's where she was going, right. You know. But I never hated it that much, you know. I always enjoyed it, and I had friends, and so, you know, had it started out with a pony and all that, and just always enjoyed going. And my mom did a really good job of getting me good horses. You know, each time I stepped up, I had a really nice horse the next step up. And so as a kid, it was just always really fun for me. And then as a teenager, I had a really great horse that kind of taught me how to win, you know. And so anyway, and it just kind of took off from there. You know, you get your name called a little bit and people want to send you horses, so it just kind of kept kind of falling in place and stuff. So
when was your first big win that you can remember?
I can remember the first like legitimate barrel race I ever won. I was 14 with that horse that I was just talking about, was Maybe Noble. She was 4, and locally where we grew up, it was pretty competitive. The numbers up here in Ohio, there's a lot more people that run than where I'm from back down in Kentucky, but it was always really competitive. Janice Wagner was just very dominant when I was young, and there was a Falmouth down there in Falmouth, Kentucky. They used to have great shows, and they would have over 100 in the barrel race, and Janice was there, and Charlie Peoples was really tough, and Brad would have been there, I guess, you know. But anyway, I won that night, and I beat Janice and Charlie and stuff, and that was a big deal to me. I was really proud of that. So,
no doubt.
So that's, you know, that was not a big win, you know, especially compared to like the BFA Super Stakes or something like that. But that really sticks out. That was really the first tough, competitive, even though it was a local barrel race. But I can remember that, so I was pretty proud.
Yeah. So did you train that horse?
My mom did. Okay. Yeah, my mom did, and I was 14, and I was a pretty good jockey, but as far as training, I probably didn't need to be training any horses at 14, so. But I could ride okay, you know. I was small, which, you know, is an advantage. And so my mom would keep that horse tuned up, and I would run her, you know. I rode her a lot during the week and stuff, but I know my mom trained her. I was the jockey for the most part. Yeah.
That's pretty cool though that you could do that. And it doesn't matter where it is, you always remember your first win just as much as you do the biggest win you have. So that's really cool. When did you start training horses yourself?
Well, like I said, that horse was really good, and I went on to win quite a bit with that mare. She was just a really great horse, consistent, super consistent horse. And we had her till she was 10 years old, so I ran her for 6 years. And a few years in, you know, once I was probably, I would say, probably 17, when I was 17, I probably knew enough, and I started riding a few client horses, and we had some colts that I was riding, and I was homeschooled. So, you know, when I was 17, I had a few to ride. But as far as really having a barn full of horses and really knowing that, like, riding horses was my job and the direction I was going to go, I was probably around 25 years old, I would say. Where I grew up, we've got a family farm, and I really always thought I'd be farming. Gotcha. You know, I always thought, as a teenager and stuff, I figured I'd be raising cattle and doing hay and that sort of thing. That's what we did, and my whole family down there, I grew up doing it, and I love that too. But as I started getting more horses and having some more success, I started spending more time with the horses and making a little more money with the horses. So yeah, as it being my job, I would say my mid-20s is really when I started being like, okay, really going to a lot of horse shows, riding 10 plus a day and stuff like that. So
that's certainly paid off for you. Yeah. I'm sure that you're happy and your clients are happy you're not farming.
Yeah, I'm not anymore at all since I moved up here. So.
Yeah, no doubt. I know you said your mom helped you a lot, but yep. Was there anybody else that has been like a big influence on you?
Several. I feel like there's several people. I feel like I've taken little things from a lot of people. Janice Wagner, you know, growing up seeing her, she made big impression on me watching Janice. She pretty unconventional kind of style with the way she would handle barrels and stuff like that, but she really actually did ride super correct, great hands, and just a great jockey. So, and then Troy Crumrine made an impression on me when we would go to the bigger shows, and futurity I always thought was cool, being a kid and stuff, and Troy was just so dominant when I was a kid, and so that, you know, he left an impression on me. But I never went and like rode with another trainer other than my mom. I've got a lot of respect for my mom, and she's knows what she's doing, so I kind of had somebody, you know, in the barn with me, you know, so yeah. She, you know, most of what I know has come from my mom. But like I said, I've watched a lot of people. There's been some people throughout my career, especially my young career, give you some tips, people I respected. And so, there's several people really that Charlie Peoples and Ross Carnahan and the Poles and people like that. I've watched them. Kelly Bowser, even. I think I like watching Kelly, and I've tried to copy some stuff. I see some of these people doing exhibitions and things like that that maybe I didn't hear from my mom. So, but just a lot from everybody. I just try to pay attention, and there's people I respect and watch, and I've picked up a few things, I guess. But.
So it's really cool. You're also really well known in not only the barrel racing industry, but the pole industry as well. And when have you always ran poles, or was that something you got into late?
Yep. Yeah, I always ran poles. All my horses as a kid knew poles. A lot of horses I get sent to me, people are sending them to me maybe just to do poles sometimes. So, and then just being in the area I grew up in down in Kentucky, everybody did poles. So, you know, these people I'm talking about, Janice and Brad and Charlie Peoples and Ross Carnahan. Ross was a great barrel racer too, you know, and so we just did both. Yeah. And even as a kid, I did flags a little bit and stuff too, you know. I haven't done that much, you know, since I was a kid, but...
You did it in August.
Yeah, I did. I did do it.
How'd that go?
It went pretty good, actually. I didn't do a good job on the training of my horse because I was just kind of showing up and running.
He doesn't know how to train a flag horse.
I don't. Yeah, I don't. But I picked it and stuck it every time. Yeah. So I didn't miss. So I was proud of myself. And I was doing it to have a good time. So,
yeah, right.
So I did. I had a good time. But that's just where we grew up. You know, we did both events.
Yeah, that's pretty cool that you can cut loose and do something like that still, as competitive as you are. And we'll get into Red as Hell a little bit later on, but just while we're on the poles, I think it's really interesting. We hear a lot of people say that when you have a really nice pole horse, mm-hmm. a lot of times they're not as nice of a barrel mm-hmm. horse. What is your opinion on that?
Yeah, I don't really feel that way. I think a good horse is a good horse. My best horses, they've done both pretty well. The Maybe Noble Horse, fantastic, and both. And then my Rhonda Dash, pretty recently, she was really great at both. She won a lot of money in both. And lately, the past several years since NPBA has gotten pretty big, there's been more money in poles, so it's been a little more worth running them.
Yeah.
When I was a kid, there was not as much money in poles. The NPBA was just getting started. It was not as big a deal. They weren't adding as much money. So with the Maybe Noble Horse, I didn't run her in poles near as much as I'm running my horses now. Just there wasn't as much to win back then.
Yeah.
I feel like those horses I'm talking about, they're athletic horses. They're willing horses. They want to work. And what I do in poles and barrels, it seems to translate to each event. I'm not really trying to teach them to turn a pole any different than a barrel. So, you know, once they know the pattern, and I think these horses that are good, we could teach them 5 or 10 patterns. I think they figure it out. I think they're smarter than we give them credit for. And that mine, these good ones, they know coming in the gate what they're doing. It doesn't seem to matter. So
as far as wins go, Vic, I know we've talked a little bit about your start and things like that, but what was a couple of your first big wins and special horses that you can remember from your childhood?
So, as a kid,
early into your career.
Well, Congress has always been a big deal to me.
Yes.
So
sure.
I'll start with that. So as a kid, when I was 13, the first real horse I had, my mom bought me a seasoned older horse. She was 21 years old, but she'd been taken great care of, and she was really good. I'd never even been to Congress. I was 13 years old. I had never been, but I'd heard about it. And my mom would go and stuff. I just, you know, I'd never competed at it. And I went up there, and I won 2 youth classes. So that was a big deal on that 21-year-old horse. And those were in poles. I won 2 youth pole classes. And then I also ran in the senior poles and got third in the senior poles. I ran a 19.7 at Congress in the senior poles and got third as a 13-year-old on a 21-year-old horse. So that was probably the first big, that was a pretty big stage. I think the numbers have dropped off at Congress a little bit. This was in 2006.
Yeah.
So Congress was the place to be back
for sure.
then. And so that was... really proud of that. And then the Maybe Noble Horse, I won a go of the barrel sweeps on her. I had a great year up there on her. She did great a few years, but one particular year, 2011, I won the first go. I got second the second go, third in the finals, and third in the average. So I had a really great show, and she hit in the youth. I think I won the youth barrels that year, and I just had a really great year that year. And that, I would say, and so in 2011 I was 18 years old, so that was pretty good. I would say that was kind of where it started, hitting pretty good.
Very cool. We'll switch gears for a little bit here. We'll talk to Reagan and Morgan kind of about their upbringing and how they got into the industry as well. You guys can just tell us a little bit about it, and some, if you have differences of things, you can chime in with that as well. But how'd you guys get started?
Well, my uncle barrel raced, and my mom had this bright idea that I needed a pony to ride at home. And so my uncle found me a pony just to ride, but it was a barrel pony. But my dad, like, did not want to own a horse, didn't want to go to horse shows, didn't want to do any of that.
Well, he had to do all of Uncle Kevin's dirty work, because he did motocross, and so he didn't have horses at all, but he was the one who had to clean Uncle Kevin's stalls and stuff.
He had to do all the bad stuff and not going to have any reward from it.
And, like, at that time, they only cleaned stalls once a week, so it was...
But yeah, so it was just like a trail pony for me. And our neighbor, we ended up getting a new neighbor, and they were like, we have this pony that my daughter used to ride. We really want you to take it to pleasure shows.
So I actually did pleasure for probably 2 to 3 years, and Regan participated. I'll say
I did my walk trot lead line.
It was pretty entertaining, but my dad was bored stiff, and we still had that other pony that was a barrel pony. And
we gotta go faster.
Yeah, he hated going, and so we got. Ended up buying a horse for my uncle to flip, and so then we started barrel racing because I couldn't stand it.
But Morgan is a state fair cart champion.
Yeah, I am. Pleasure driving and Western Pleasure with my little Shetland pony. And I ended up ruining him because we started barrel racing, and like that thing, once he knew how to run, it was over.
Oh, yeah, we
he
blew
would not the do cart. Pleasure anymore.
The cart,
yeah. We blew him up.
Yeah, he... It was done. And like I took him after we had started barrel racing quite a bit, I took him back to a pleasure show because he was worth more as a pleasure pony.
Right.
And anyways, they started talking on the intercom and he went crazy in the arena, like freaking prancing, running sideways, everybody staring at me because like they're all like going slow. And we ended up selling him as a barrel pony.
Well, like he was done. A horse would start prancing or something and like the pleasure classes, and like they're like ripping the kid off the horse, like,
oh, yeah, it's a different world for sure.
Well, you can say you're well rounded, right?
Yeah,
yeah, we didn't realize we were talking to you were a multiple champion, of multiple,
yeah,
we didn't know that.
He was a really good in the driving because he'd like flip his feet really pretty. Gotcha. We beat horses, he's a little Shetland pony, and we at the state fair they had like 2 or 3 heats, and he won.
Oh,
with a little cart with bike tires on it. But he did it so pretty.
That's funny. I've seen your all's videos, which cracks me up, of the ponies. Like, don't you have a stud pony or something?
Yes.
I do. 250 live cover only.
Oh, okay.
So when we sold those ponies, like, Regan, like, was all tore up and she got this wrapping paper, made Dad sign a contract that he would buy her a new pony if she sold her pony. And he
Wreck
never did
out.
Because, I mean, it's time to move on. Right. And I'm not kidding, literally, like, a year and a half ago, she bought 3 Shetland ponies. I'm like, what do you need these things for? But
so what do you do with them?
Well, I ended up selling them, but they were pretty entertaining for the time being. One of them drove the cart. The other one, I don't think I ever would have hooked up to one. And then the other one was honestly just too old and little. I couldn't do anything with her. But they were good ponies.
She broke them in halters, and like Justin and her boyfriend, like, I mean, they're short enough, like you're not gonna get hurt. And they took off running with both of them across our outdoor, 100 miles an hour in halters. They're both reared back trying to stop them.
Well, and they're so little and skinny, like. He doesn't ride, so, like, he tried to hang on, but, like, it's like a little barrel.
There.
Like, you just roll off.
Oh, you were on them. Yeah. I thought you meant, like, they tried to... Oh,
no, they were on them.
Oh, my God.
So, if you guys ever wonder what the Hennings do in their free time, this is it.
A lot of goofing off.
So, William, do you help train the ponies, too?
No,
he just only trains the wiener dog.
He refuses to help me break.
We've got a little flag, and we've got one of those exercisers, and if you put it, like, in the little panel, that dog will run 100 miles an hour, round and around and around.
So you're also a dog trainer?
Yes.
I like it.
I don't know. My dog training career hadn't taken off yet. But,
well, maybe this is the start of it.
Maybe we can interview you with us.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I keep trying to talk him into breaking my little stud pony, and he's like, no, no. He lunged me a couple times.
So when did you guys get, like, into barrel racing? Where did that go from the ponies to the pleasure to the...
We were going to go to the fair one year, and Strangles went around, so we went to a barrel race instead.
Well, my first couple barrel horses, they were borrowed. Because, uh-huh. my dad had went to barrel races with my uncle a lot, so he had gotten relationships with barrel horse people already, and they definitely helped point us in the right direction.
Well, they were our field neighbors, too, and our dogs would run off during the storms.
Right.
And that's really how we met one of them.
Well, yeah, so it was, I probably barrel raced for 2 years before I actually had a horse of my own.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. What about you?
Barrel?
When did you start? Yeah.
I got my first pony whenever I was 4. Mom and Dad thought it was a fantastic idea to buy a 4-year-old pony. It didn't
they
last.
They learn together.
Yeah, it didn't last long. I got bucked off a couple times off that one, so they bought me one that was 30 and didn't have any teeth. That one was a good pony.
That was the better choice.
Reagan, yeah, she's always out of control. And like, just always all over the place, not paying attention. Dad bribing her with stuff to try to get her focused.
Apparently, I always ate hot dogs before I ran.
She has not changed.
This is typical first, second child syndrome.
I don't know, there's old runs where, like, at Jackson, I'm turning the second barrel, my head's turned toward the dirt pile looking at my friends.
So did you want to barrel race, or were you just drug along? Like,
she really just wanted to go to the dirt pile.
I talked a lot of smack, though, I'll tell you.
Do you?
I did.
It.
I got better.
So, we had, like, some peewee-type horses, and somehow it came together that she ended up borrowing a horse, and it actually got taken from her at Congress, didn't know it was going back home.
Oh.
And so we were screwed. Like, she didn't have a horse.
Right.
And Carla Arthur was like, hey, we've got this. I've got this old 17-year-old broodmare. I think your daughter could ride it. And so that was Storytelling Flower. Mm-hmm. And
whoa, so you went from a peewee horse to
So he started out 3D.
He went slow, and he just kept getting faster.
Well, he kicked in the stall real bad. Like at home and everything, and his hocks would get real big. And so we hobbled him all the time in the stall. And like, his hocks weren't sore anymore, so he just started going faster because he didn't hurt anymore.
Right. Wow. Gotcha.
But yeah, so she ran Daisy at Jackson and hit all three barrels on her, hated her. And
that horse better not be on the trailer.
Yeah, like, did not want her. And
she was too fast.
Dad, like, we didn't know what to do or whatever. And we ended up buying her for $6,000 that day.
Oh my God.
Got her home. She needed
got bucked
a little
off.
Surgery or whatever. Came back from her surgery. Bucked Reagan off. Like, this is, like, not going well. She freaking hates her. But
I wonder what the story was. Together. It's funny because we showed with Carla. And actually, so my best friend's dad actually owned the stud horse and bred that mare.
Yeah.
And I didn't know that until you started running her. And I was like, that's weird. So we actually looked it up. And I was like, holy crap, that's out of Jim's stud horse. So it was just really funny because of that. And then, like, we ran against her some with Carla. And she... So the guy that was on her, which you guys probably know the story of her, but maybe other people don't, but Bobby Fraley had her that we show with at home, and it was some relation to Bobby that ran her, and she was slow. Like, she just went in and, like, would just, like, slow lope the pattern, and so when Carla, she, like, won some barrel races with her, and we were all like, where did that come from? Wow. Like, but I always wondered how that came to be that you guys got her.
Well, Carla had said she used to be a pack horse in West Virginia. They literally just rode this horse up and down the mountain all day, taking stuff.
Oh, see, I didn't know that part. Okay.
And Carla said, I think she bought her from the Fraleys for Doug. And
yeah,
Doug started doing good on her, and she's like, this horse is too fast for you. I need to run her. But then, I know she had obviously bred her, like, on purpose while she had her. But a different time, she had her at Jeff Harper's, and the mare jumped the fence. The stud didn't jump the fence. The mare did. And that was
Storytelling Daisy.
Oh, Lucy. I did not know that.
Yep, she was an oops baby.
Yep.
Wow, well, that was a good oops, for sure.
Worked out good,
too. She actually, I think, she did win the panty raid, but I think it was the first year of the panty raid.
Right.
That horse won.
Talking about Lucy?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So that was your first...
Maturity horse?
Big, yeah.
Gotcha. Well, you might want to talk about Congress.
Yeah, my first big win was the sweepstakes.
I was there that year.
I remember it very well.
I got like five or six clean runs in a weekend, and that never happens. Ever.
For sure. She was a knocker, yeah. Yeah, you rode her well, and she did not look easy to me. She was
I don't know. If you watch the video, you can see me doing little mini kicks, because I told Dad, I'm like, I'm not going to stop kicking. And so, like, going around the barrels, you can see my feet are like, kicking her around it.
I think any horse that an 8-year-old can ride is probably pretty easy, but... I mean, you have to ride them every step of the way, but she, like, all of her babies and, like, our stud, they all have, get them trained and they're pretty easy to ride.
They're very smart. They catch on quick.
Mm-hmm. And I always say, I'm like, well, if an 8-year-old could ride his mom, like, I can probably ride his babies.
Right, yeah.
But that,
at least that's my theory.
That particular Congress, like, Jolene Montgomery was there with JL-Heaven. And, like, Congress used to be so competitive.
It was.
And Reagan had done so good. Like, I remember everybody was in that Coliseum to watch this little 8-year-old girl on this old trail horse.
And she was tiny. There tiny.
Yeah. Beat big, big time horses.
Yes.
And she did it.
And
that place
Carla had one on her. But she just needed, I mean, she was old.
But I didn't know her. I didn't
old.
Know who she, I didn't know the horse, and I didn't know Reagan either. Like,
well,
that, to me, you know.
That's what I was going to ask if you knew them at the time.
No, no. That's probably the first time I ever remember hearing of those guys.
Right.
Well, that's
probably when that happened.
That's how the One Last Story horse came about, was because of the Congress. Because Daisy won, and JL-Heaven got second, and
he
Judd Little.
Winning everything, mm-hmm. and then she comes in and beats him.
Right? Judd Little thought Daisy was the best thing since sliced bread.
Well, you didn't just barely beat him, right? You beat him by like 2 or 3 tenths.
I think he ran a 14.8 and Daisy ran a 14.6.
Yeah.
Wow.
But, so he made a deal with Dad to do the embryos, him pay for it all, us each get a baby.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, so we fletched her quite a few times and we only ended up getting Joey. And so we ended up buying our half out from him.
Because we had to put her down, because she tore her deep flexor tendon, but that's why he has a brand, because he went out there and then we ended up buying
our
half back.
Yeah, like 3 months later.
But he was born in Ohio. We took him to Congress and we got him back. Took him to Congress, gave him away, and then ended up.
Now, did she tear that? Did she get her at the Congress?
Yes.
Okay, that's
it.
We were there that year, and actually, when you came out, I remember seeing her very lame.
Yep.
And I was like, oh no.
Well, there is a hump in the alley.
No, that was whenever she fractured her sesamoid. So she got hurt at Congress twice.
Wow.
The one year there was a hump in the alley, she stepped on the hump, her other foot missed the ground, and then her back foot just came up and hit her front foot, and she fractured her sesamoid then.
Okay.
Her deep flexor, I think she just tore it.
She just turned the first barrel, and it tore it. And so it actually started healing, but when they went to change one of the casts, it had gotten a lot worse. And
her
foot was, it was tearing too. So.
And how old was she?
We put her down at 21.
And how many babies did you guys have out of her? Did you get?
Well, we had Storytelling Daisy and then our stud. And Val Kiphart actually named him One Last Story because it was her last baby.
Oh, okay, gotcha. I didn't know if you had any others or not.
Well, we had bought one of them, Martha. Martha was one of Daisy's babies. And I don't remember what she was out of.
Martha's Frenchman.
Yeah, that's it.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize that she had.
But we got Lucy on a trait. Because she might have kicked Doug off the trailer, broke a couple of his ribs, and Carla's like, you need to come get this horse, like, I think Doug might kill her. And so we had owned half of one of Carla's horses, and so she really liked that horse, so we traded our half of that horse for Lucy.
Oh, okay.
So.
Gotcha. But you ended up running the stud, right?
Yeah.
Okay, how did that come?
Because I got Lucy.
Oh, okay.
So it's your turn.
Yeah.
So who was your first big, your first?
The first paternity I ever won was on our stud at Winfield.
Okay. Oh. I remember him too. Yeah, he's so cool. Yeah, he's very cool.
How long did you get to run him?
We retired him a couple years ago. It just, hauling a stud is just a pain. And
he's noisy.
We had more open or fraternity horses coming up. We had gotten more into the breeding, and it was just easier. And like being gone and getting them collected and stuff, just better just to retire them.
But
right. And you guys call him Joey?
Yeah.
How many babies do you guys have out of him, or have you ran out of him?
Only a handful. We've probably had
10 maybe?
We've had more than 10.
I feel like you've had a lot too.
I don't know. I can't count.
Well, the thing is it took 25 babies before
That's
we
not
before
ours.
We were allowed to put him in Future Fortunes.
Yes.
And so we had a lot of Joey babies for a good chunk of while. Because that's all we bred him. Like, we bred him to all of our mares to get
the
baby numbers up.
Well, I'll say the first year that any of them ran was 2020.
Oh, okay.
So, the oldest ones were fertility horses in 2020.
Gotcha. But he has a pretty cool story, too, though. Because didn't he break his...
Yeah,
didn't
so...
Didn't something happen to him?
Literally, just by our half out. Get him sent off.
How old was he when you... Sorry.
A 2 year. We hadn't bought him back that
much. He had gotten weaned. We sent him off. We bought him 3 months later. And then after we got him broke, he came home as a 2-year-old.
Okay.
And flipped over on the walker or something. We took his friend away.
Well, he was starting to act a little study. Mm-hmm. And, like, we hadn't decided what we wanted to do because we had just put his mom down a few months before. And it was, like, one of those old walkers that just walk or whatever. And, yeah, we took the horse away. Came back. He's laying on his head. We thought he was dead, but yeah, like we couldn't even get him on the trailer. Like our vet had just left and we like literally like backed
the
trailer
up. He was like
up.
Spinning in circles, like couldn't hardly stand up.
Oh my God.
So he fractured his skull and there was air getting to his brain and they said there was a 50-50 chance he was going to live and he would never be a barrel horse.
He said 20% chance being a trail horse.
Yeah. Wow. He ran after that, right?
Yeah.
He ran in.
Yep. I mean, I pretty much placed it at every fertility I ran him at. And I made the sweepstakes finals on him as a 4-year-old, too.
I don't know. He was scary to walk once he came home from OSU because I can remember walking him in a stall and he turned left too fast and he fell down. He really didn't get more coordinated until we just turned him out in the field one day.
Just let him go be a horse, figure
yeah.
it out.
Yeah. Wow. And you guys are still breeding him, right?
Yeah.
That's what I thought. So, let's talk a little bit about your training program.
Yeah.
And kind of just give us a little bit about what you do. And.
Well, so I probably start them on poles most of the time. Mm-hmm. Just because of the time of year I get them. Like if we're riding inside, I do poles. Like with our small arena, it works. And then once we can start riding outside more, I start working on barrels more.
Mm-hmm.
But like I kind of said earlier, I like rounder, like moving, like kind of constantly moving turns, type turns, and I do that in poles and barrels.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'm teaching my colts to turn the poles just like I would a barrel. So if I've started them on poles, and I'll work barrels a little bit inside, but once I go outside and start working them on barrels, they already know how to turn how I like. It's mm-hmm. just teaching them the pattern, the nuances to the pattern, you know. And so
how many do you have a lot of horses in training for other people?
We've got several. Yeah, Morgan knows more than me. She keeps up with all that better.
I would say that we have
like 10, I think. Isn't that what we counted the other day?
10 or 12
client horses right now. We're probably riding 20 a day.
And so do you guys just kind of share Morgan the responsibilities, or do you have your own set and you have your own set? How
we
does that work?
We kind of have our own sets.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
We don't flip flop much. And
it's
even
better for the horse.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
to be consistent. I mean, if you only have one, I mean, you can't get anything done in 30 days hardly. So over a 60 day period, they need consistency. It's better to show them one way.
Yeah.
You know.
Do you guys train differently? Do you feel like?
Yeah.
Or?
I feel like.
Yeah. For sure.
And you break colts, right? Do you break colts?
I used to.
But
I don't.
Now.
Yeah, I wouldn't advertise that.
Yeah, I understand completely.
I will break my own, but I really won't take any horses that aren't broke really anymore.
Yeah.
Other
I'm
than
not
my
strong
own.
Enough and if they start bucking. So.
Well, and even mine, if they're easy, mm-hmm. you know, I'll do it. But if they're gonna take time. Or, you know, or something like that. If I don't like it, well, if I feel scared at all,
mm-hmm.
or if I feel like they're going to take a lot of time or something, I'll have someone else do it, generally.
What about you, Reagan? Do you take client horses as well?
Yes.
Okay.
Not as many, though.
Do you guys train out of the same place?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You do?
Yeah,
okay.
Oh, yeah, it's packed.
I was just thinking, wow, how do you keep everything there?
And do you have a different style than the both of them, or are you and Morgan kind of the same?
I feel like me and her are very similar, just because we learn from the same people.
Yeah.
But we are still very different in many ways.
Yeah. Who do you guys feel like has influenced you? Who's helped you? Who do you think has taught you a lot?
Denny Dawson, Cody Boserman. My dad went to high school with Cody, so they've always been great friends. And
Ken
Brad Chirese helped us. The Bakers have helped us. We've had a lot of people help us. My uncle obviously has helped us, but yeah, we didn't know anything really, and so we had to rely on a lot of people to show us what we should do.
I don't know. Dad just picked a horse and was like, "Yeah, they'll be fine." Like, Morgan had one that reared up in the chute, so Dad kept the treat in his pocket, and she'd get up to the chute, he'd shove a treat in his mouth because he wouldn't rear up because he was focused on the treat.
Just
send her.
This is so funny. It's a good strategy.
Very good strategy.
Right. Said, like, I don't get nervous because my dad put me on so many horses that I thought might kill me.
Yeah.
That's all right, though.
Thank goodness they're just going to go in there and run the pattern.
That's all right.
Now.
He got his karma, though, because me and her both ran him over once.
He did.
Hers was full bore coming out of the arena, though.
Somebody messed his foot up. Was that Reagan?
That was Lucy.
He got his foot stepped on.
No. Mine.
Oh, that wasn't in there.
Just holding on to my horse, and she stepped on his boot and spun
mine
over top of him.
Mine literally smoked him. Like, I'm 10 years old, pulling back, and just freaking plowed over him.
He had his phone in his pocket, and he had a giant bruise on his thigh, and his phone broke and everything else.
So would you guys say that when you started winning that your dad was happier to be barrel racing?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He can't help himself.
He definitely enjoyed it.
He loves it.
Yeah.
Joe likes it a lot.
He quit kind of coming and paying for stuff as far as in the last couple years. And, like, he can't stand it.
Oh, yeah. He's got to come.
Yeah. So now he has Ixied the famous Corona mare to the goodbye lane because he has to have a hand in it.
Yeah,
he can't handle not doing it at all. He
that
does
would
like
be hard. I mean, if it was a part of your life for all of your kids' childhood, then yeah.
No, he enjoys it a lot. And like the amount, if you think about it, like we never bought a horse for a lot of money, but he paid for so much stuff, like lessons. And, you know, maybe, like, sending one of our horses off.
The big collection.
Oh, my gosh. Like, L&W, like, he always wanted us to have the best opportunity we could.
Mm-hmm.
And William Crutcher, when he still owned L&W, I mean, he's set up here, too, but he'd see me coming, he'd get the biggest grin on his face because he knew I was dragging my dad up there because I found something that was going to work.
Well, the thing is, too, is, like, William Crutcher said this weekend, like, whenever Morgan picked out a bit, Dad would buy two so that each of us had one.
Right.
So if he sold one, he sold two.
Yeah.
Right. How funny.
But, yeah, I mean, just all the lessons. I mean, paying for us to run horrible, but, like, needing the experience, you know. And, yeah, I mean, he might not have bought the horsepower, but he definitely paid for our education.
Right. Yeah, for sure. Now, what horse do you feel like was a big horse that you won a lot on, or one that was really memorable for you? Or
our stud, him, Star 67.
Yeah.
Reagan actually trained her, but
despite what everybody thinks,
I just started telling people that I did it because just to like irritate her. But
well, like I ran her until she was like 6 or 7, and then Morgan started running. They were like, "Oh yeah, you trained
actually,
her, right?" And she's like,
that.
"Yeah, I did. Yeah, I did." I actually had her loping the pattern in 3 days because our indoor flooded. And she had a very unconventional start, let's just say. Because she didn't lope it pretty.
Oh.
We just did it.
Right.
We learned how to counter arc about 3 months before the BFA.
I told her, I was like, you're going to blow this horse
we
up.
We just did it reverse.
And then it was totally fine. But anyways, Star 67, the first baby of my studs that I went on was Famous Last Words. Mm-hmm. And I made the Fort Smith finals on her and the BFA finals on her. And I would say, like, I mean, we had open horses that we had done well on, but for it to finally click with the young horses, our stud was my first one. And, like, to, like, feel how you can trust them, but also don't go too far with it, you know. But, and then that famous last words, she did pretty well. But
a lot of the babies out of the stud are really nice, and I don't want to skip over talking about him. He's a really nice stud. We've talked about several times that we would really like to breed to him. Tell us what you think he kind of puts in a mare and what he crosses good on. And
a lot of them, they've been lower headed. Like, they're not real high-headed horses. We've actually, like, sold several to kids and senior riders, and they can go on and do well with them. There was actually my 4-year-old last year I sold 2 weeks before the panty raid to an 11-year-old, and she brought her here this weekend a year later, and she ran a 16-0 and a 16-1 on this horse.
I watched
and, like, I literally had her long enough to get her going.
Right.
But that's how a lot of them have been. Like, as long as, like, show them what to do, they get it, get out of their way, they know what to do.
It literally takes, like,
she actually
less than a week to teach them to do something.
Wow,
they just retain
awesome.
It so well.
She actually just ran a 20.2 in poles on her a couple weeks ago.
Oh, that's so cool.
So.
Yeah, that has to feel good to see people
and
do
then,
well with them.
Yeah. Famous last words, Ella Meredith runs her, and she's placed on her at Congress the last couple years. So.
Yeah, I remember that mare as well.
They're all pretty honest.
Yeah. What do you guys look for, all of you, like, in a prospect? Do you breed, mostly breed your own? Do you, I mean, I know you have the stud, so you, but do you buy other horses, or?
We do some, but the open horses that we had had success on, like, they are our broodmare band now.
Uh-huh.
So we'll breed some of them to our stud, and then we also like to, you know, pick other stuff to breed them to, but like I've told William, I'm like, I don't know if I could pick out like a good horse. Like, I'm so used to breeding them. Like,
right.
Like, I know like that horse had it, you know, so breed her to something nice and
yeah.
Hopefully it does too.
Yeah. What about you, William?
Well, I like when they're cheap. That's what I look for. I look for cheap ones.
That's the most important.
That I can afford, something I can afford. We just, what we used to do, we never really raised that many.
Mm-hmm.
All the ones that I had that were pretty good, we ended up buying. We just looked around for good deals and just tried to find the best bred things we could. The past few years, I've been able to find grandbabies of Dash to Fame mm-hmm. for reasonable prices, and they're not in any incentives. A lot of them, like my filly now and stuff, not really many incentives, but that's kind of what I've looked for, just grandbabies of something really good and just good confirmation. And like I said, I've been getting along with the Dash to Fame kind of bloodlines, those grandbabies. So the Rhonda Dash was like that. And so I don't really have any secret. I like mares, and I kind of like the Dash to Fame. And then I have my budget, and if I can find something that fits in there, I just give it a shot, you know.
And plain colors are better. They're just better.
Plain colors?
Plain colors.
I've done pretty good with grays.
I
know.
I love horses, and I'll take all the horses. So I usually run everything past William so he can tell me no.
Mm-hmm. He's like that. He's like, okay,
I'm
to stop you.
Yes, I'm too impulsive, so I just, I like, give him the evidence and just say yes or no.
Well, that works out well.
I do not look at many horse ads on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I feel sometimes I get the urge. I feel like I need a yearling, and so I'll try to find some stallions that I like and maybe contact breeders or whatever. And then that's how I found her, the Red as Hail. Like, that's how I did that, and the Rhonda Dash. And so anyway, if a lot, like, I think mare power's great. So if you could somehow stumble upon something that had a good mama, regardless of what the daddy is. A lot of times you don't get good deals on those because everybody else knows that. Maybe
right.
The owners don't want to let them go. That the owner of the mare, you know, maybe they rode the mare or whatever. That's pretty common.
Yep.
They don't let them go very cheap usually, but if you can find something like that, that'd be a great way to go. Kind of like what Morgan was saying, some of their old mares. But, yeah, I don't have any secret sauce on that. I just...
With the Dash to Fame, what do you specifically like about them that works well with
they
your...
They stay pretty round. They're very natural to me. Like, the filly I've got now, she is very Dash to Fame esque, the round kind of scrambling around a little. She does that a little. She kind of balls up and just keeps moving around, and I love the way that feels.
Yeah.
It's they take to the barrels and the poles both really easy. They're just natural, and you know, like I said, they've really took to the poles good too.
Yeah.
And they're athletic, so.
She's, so did you, I guess we can just talk about her a little bit.
Yeah.
Since you mentioned her, how old was she when you ended up with her?
So we went out in Oklahoma, we sold a horse out there, a pretty valuable horse, and the horse was not mine, but I made some commission off of her.
It
and
was also a Grand of Dash
yeah,
of Fame.
Yeah, a grand baby of Dash of Fame, another one I got along with. So anyway, we were out in Oklahoma, and just right down the road was Jolene Hales, who owns Streakin' to Fame and Perks Alive and owned Rare Bar and has had some good stallions. So we were about 30 minutes away. So we just drove down there. I had a little money in my pocket. I was shopping, but I really wasn't going to buy anything particularly. And so we went down there, and that filly caught my eye. I was on the Streakin' to Fame bandwagon. I'd seen several that I liked.
Yeah.
And again, he kind of fit what like the Dash to Fame stallion, and then I saw him when that trip we saw him, and he really like, if I can make a horse, I love the way he looks.
Yeah.
So anyway, we just went out in the field, and there was like 15 babies out in the field, and she just caught my eye. I didn't know anything about her mama.
Yeah.
I liked that baby. It was a Streakin' to Fame baby and a filly, and so I just liked her, and then so I wanted to buy her. We bought her. Then I bought her then, which she was 2 weeks old, so she was a baby. She was a baby, and she was a late baby. She was born in June, so she's actually not even 4 years old yet.
Oh my gosh!
But so she was a late baby, so she was tiny. She was a lot smaller than all the other ones, but I don't know. She just caught my eye, and then she's out of a designer red mare, which I like that, but you know, I don't necessarily go seeking that out. But
right.
Anyway, and she we left her out there. Of course, you know,
right.
She was only 2 weeks old, so we went, we've got some friends that live in Texas that's pretty close, and they went and picked her up once she was weaned, and so, yeah, I didn't get her home till later that fall.
Did you break her?
My brother helped me break her. Mm-hmm. I was still down in Kentucky when we broke her, but yeah, I've done everything, so, except for maybe Morgan tries to take credit sometimes because she's exhibitioned her a few times.
Yeah. I was like, literally the last time I expoed that horse was the last time it didn't run 1D. So, I mean, I obviously did something.
You did, for sure. I see that logic. I get it. Have you ever ran her through? Have you ever had?
I ran her in poles once, but it was like way back in September. So Denise Evans had broke her ribs, and he ran her horses that weekend at the best of the best. So I took her to a jackpot and just like expoed her and ran her in poles and stuff. But
I'm kind of stingy with her.
I get it. I get it completely.
He actually.
Well, no, hold on. Reagan ran her.
At the American
back in February.
My horse got an abscess, and he graciously was like, well, you can run her if you want. And I'm like, deal.
She had a great first go run.
At Lexington.
Yeah, and so Reagan was not familiar with her at all. And kind of, and this all happened really quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, the day before she went down there, she took her over to Crazy Woman and rode her. And then
I was a little scared after that. It could have gone better at Lancaster.
Wow.
But
I didn't go with her.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I went all by myself. It was freaking like -2.
It was super, super cold that day. Yeah, it was one of them really, really cold days.
Were you a little nervous just because of what you
had? Well, yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm fine with jump riding horses. I usually do all right jump riding. But I'm like, I don't want to screw this up.
No doubt.
But, so, I mean, I think she got 10th in the first go.
Yeah.
She was lower down than that, weren't you?
No, I got 10th.
She got 10th in the first go and then caught a barrel in the second go, but would have made it to the performance on her.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
But she did. The filly, like, I've clipped some barrels. She snaps back, and I'll clip them coming out, and Reagan just didn't have enough time to figure her out. Yeah, and she clipped a barrel. She just turned a little too tight on them.
So you started running her in the polls last year, yeah. Is that right?
That's right. She started clocking pretty good in polls probably around in August. And then the NPBA championship show, that's Labor Day weekend. So that's 1st of September, and she had a great show in the polls. Then she ran, her fastest run was a 19.3, but she ran 19s all weekend. So wow. She had a really great show. But then that was it, because then I was started preparing really for the Super Stakes.
Right.
So.
Now, are there no rules with the polls how does that work?
So this is my understanding of the rules, that you can run anything or do anything with a horse for money as long as it is not barrels.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that could be on the racetrack, or that could be poles, that could even be pleasure or whatever.
Right.
You know, so
you just can't time only in the middle of the class. It has to be at the
end. Yeah,
can you run as a 3-year-old,
yeah,
and then still futurity them as a 4-year-old in the polls, or how does that
work?
Well,
so the pole futurity, and where there's just not a whole lot of pole futurity horses, you know, it's just not as big. They're really lenient. It's just a glorified junior class.
Gotcha.
That is for 4 and 5-year-olds.
And no rules besides
there's
that.
There's really not any rules as far as competing for that. Or
that's
whatever.
What we were.
Because they don't want to knock people out. They want as many.
Right.
They need, you know, what was their 30 here? You know, so they need as many people as they can get.
Well, and Lou, this weekend it was a 4 and 5-year-old, but there's shows too where it'll be 5 and under. So like 3-year-olds are welcome to enter if it's 5 and under. Mm-hmm. But if it's a 4 and 5, then you can't enter.
Then you can't
enter
a 3-year-old.
Yeah,
oh,
that's
okay.
True.
That's a really smart strategy to get them exposure. And,
yeah,
you know,
it
works.
They
go see different pins,
yeah,
and she handles pressure.
And yeah.
And you knew what she was going to do under pressure. I'm sure.
Yes. The best thing that I can tell as far as like being prepared, like preparing them for that the way poles does, is I exhibition poles just like I would barrels.
Mm-hmm.
And then so you do your thing in exhibition and you go put the horse up and you won't run for hours later.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so like let's say you run 5 hours later, no exhibitions, and I, you know, she was doing really good, so I tried to win.
Right.
So I'm asking her, so she, you know, it's not like you can do an exhibition and you get to go in there and you get to go slow and do your thing, and then you can turn right back around, you know, a horse or two later doing exhibitions and send them through and they do really good.
Right.
You go put that horse up in a stall for 5 hours, bring them back out, music's playing, crowd's going, tractor's driving, it's a little different, you know.
Right.
So doing poles, they get that.
Yes.
That you get you warm them up, prepare them like you're going to run them, and you run them, and so they get to feel that a little sooner. Yes, the way the competition works, exactly.
Yeah.
They get to feel that a little sooner than if you just exhibition them.
That's a very cool strategy that I'd never even, thought about.
Yeah.
So did you always feel like you were going to do the Super Stakes with her, or at what point did you really think, like, that she might have something?
I didn't want to do it.
No, we kind of made them.
Yeah, Reagan had a nice colt going, and he kind of had some injuries and had a little setback there and stuff, but that was the whole time she had what we thought was the best colt. So
he time only her when it was kind of getting close to the deadline, and I was like, why, like, you should run her, and he's like, well, she's not going fast enough. I was like, well, how much faster does she need to go? And he's like, probably a couple tenths. I was like, you don't think you can make up a couple tenths between now and then?
Well, so we had to, what was it, October 1st or something,
yeah,
you had to know. And
so September 1st, this was this conversation that was happening.
And we go to Crazy Woman a lot, and that's great. And I kind of owe a little bit of that Super Stakes to Joyce for just the way she does stuff over there. Just I was able to prepare pretty well for it. Just she has those jackpots, the ground's always great there.
Yep.
And she's cool with us. We, you know, we let her know we're coming and we can go over there and ride pretty much whenever and so you know, we were doing that. But I think we had kind of talked what's good enough, like what does our colt need to run over at Crazy Woman to be good enough to be confident in the Super Stakes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I think we set a 15.5, and I went over there and I time only and I ran a 15.5, which is a great run in there.
Oh,
he was still him hauling though.
And I was like, gosh dang it, like
crap.
Yeah, I had made my, like, I had set my goal and I achieved it, so now I had to do it. So.
Well, he was still him hauling real bad. And he's like, well, just go ahead and try and sell it. And if it doesn't
we
sell,
didn't even try to
yeah,
sell it.
We didn't even post it. We're like, all right, he's doing it.
I don't blame you. It's a good thing. Now you're like, man, I'm glad they were on top of me about that.
For sure. I mean, yeah, that was the right thing to do,
I mean,
obviously.
That is probably one of the most nerve-wracking things you can do.
Oh, I cannot imagine. Yeah.
And before, he bought himself like a little piece of, a little candy bar, like the Godiva nice chocolate candy bar.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm going to eat this beforehand. I know, it's because he's nervous.
So I've got to ask, like, with that being said, were you as big of a believer in yourself as Nina Shirey was? I remember sitting there watching her interview beforehand and her saying,
well,
I mean, she called it.
She had been doing great in time onlys, and I did not expect to win it, you know, but I felt really good out there. She had really been working so good, and I thought I had a good game plan, and she had been so consistent, so I thought she would do good. I definitely thought top five was possible, but yeah, as far as winning it, I did not expect to do that, and I don't know, just something like that, it's so hard to win.
Yeah.
It's shocking when that actually happens.
Yeah, that's very cool.
So I think it's important to talk to you, Reagan, about the other side of this, like, you were planning on taking that slot. You had a really nice colt prepared, and things just happened. Injuries just happened. And so how are you able to, like, mentally still cheer him on when that was kind of your dream, your goal, and, like, to see him win it?
Well, so it helps a lot. Dad owns the slot. So, like, every year we have the option to do it. So, like, if I want to use it sometime,
you know,
I can.
Get that opportunity,
but my thing is, like, whenever it came down to it, mine didn't need entered.
Right.
And his was much better than mine. Still is much better than mine.
Is that the colt you're running now?
Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay.
My late bloomer.
So we just have some questions, just random questions that I think people would like to know. Like, if you all could individually have 3 bits to train colts, what would you pick?
My last. Anyway, so the Sharon Hall O1M, I've made so many people buy it. I love it. Love it. I put it on everything. But, so, the Sharon Hall O1M. The ticket bit I use a lot, especially going between an O-ring and any type of shank, mm-hmm. because it gets them used to the chain, but it's not a whole lot more than an O-ring.
That's a Carrie Kelly.
Yeah.
Yep.
So that's
and other than that, I really just kind of use a D-ring. I might use a junior cow horse every now and again. I mean, those two are the two that I use the most.
The most.
And other than that, I'll just kind of throw stuff on them and see what they like.
Right.
The bits I use the most are like a D-ring, different mouthpieces. He has a training bit that I'll use like for a step up from that D-ring. It's just a 3-ring bit. It's like a good introduction to a little bit of shank or whatever. And then I ran Star in a bit. It's just a lifter with a dog leg, and I use that on a lot of horses.
That's 3.
I feel like those two
can be your 3. This is coming from the girl that made her dad buy her bit.
Yeah.
Well,
and then the other one is an Elliot gag.
See, I know. I thought she was going to say like 10.
Those are the ones I use like on every horse. They're all in pretty head stalls because I use them the most.
Well, you have your horse flippers and you have a bit flipper.
Yeah.
I have a problem.
She has to try everything.
I literally just sold like 15.
And
last
about
week.
Had a mental breakdown over it, too.
Well, yeah. She bought a box of bits, and there was like 100 bits in the box. And, like, it took her a year to start getting rid of them because she didn't want to get rid of them.
Issues. Listen, I like bits, too, and she makes fun of me, but you know where she goes when she needs a bit? To me. So
that
I'm just
is
like,
exactly.
Too bad. Like,
William.
It's very annoying because, like, I don't know. And sometimes you can just change just a little teeny tiny thing, and it makes a difference. So I get it.
Yeah.
William has like 8 bits, period.
Yeah. We could
make that sounds like her. She has 3, I think.
Yeah. So I have some people make me custom bits. So I've really started just using their bits. I think they do a great job booting bits. They're down in Texas. And because I had some like Elliot's and stuff that I couldn't get anymore. He quit for a little while for some reason. I think he's making them again. But anyway, I built a relationship with these guys. So I like gag bits that move a little, you know, not necessarily like the, I do like the bigger, like the Elliot gags that do a lot of sliding, but that would not be in one of my 3 bits, but I like a little bit of gag. I also am anti like 2-piece mouthpieces. I like at least 3 pieces. So like dog bones and stuff like that, at least, because I just feel like 2 pieces don't fit in the horse's mouth very good. I think they can rub their bars or even pinch them, or if you know they get into a point, maybe they could even hit the roof of their mouth or something like that. So I get a lot better feel from bits that are 3 piece at least or whatever. A lot of my bits that I have them make, they're like twisted or smooth on the side with a chain in the center, and I love the way those bits feel. So my 3 bits would be with that, with the chain in the middle, and we all 3 said the D-ring snaffle, and that's what I start everything in. And then Morgan said my training bit, I use that all the time. That's what I ran Red as Hell in this weekend. It's super light, and it's a great transition bit for me with these young ones. And then my Ronda Dash bit, the booting bits makes for me. It's a step up for open horses. It's got a little bit of gag. The way it's made, like up around the top of the cheek, like where the curb chain and stuff is at, you do have a little bit of woe, like if you need a little more or whatever, but I've run a lot of open horses in it. I named it after Ronda Dash. That was the bit I used with her, and so she won a lot in that bit, so that's kind of a good open horse.
Gotcha. Yeah. Cool. So as far as maintenance goes, how do you guys keep your horses running? What do you preventative maintenance? Do you just kind of wait until they tell you something? What do you guys do as far as that goes?
Preventative.
Yeah.
We usually, we run all year round. There's not really a break.
Mm-hmm.
So usually we'll get their hocks and coffins injected twice a year.
Gotcha.
But we have them gone over.
Yeah.
Often.
We're pro vet. I mean, we don't want them sore.
If
our vet goes over and thinks they need something injected, you know, whatever, we're all for it.
Do you do any therapies or any kind?
Well, I mean, Taylor comes and does chiropractor pretty regularly.
Yeah, Taylor Hunter chiropractors for us once a month. And then I've gotten back into the nebulizer. I'm not real consistent with it, but.
Poultice works.
Some voodoo kind of stuff. I don't understand it, but I do put it on quite a bit. I don't.
Cold hosing works.
Yeah, no, that's for sure. Ice, stuff like that. You know,
ice is a big thing for sure.
And what about ulcers? I know that's a big thing for people. And with you, I feel like you guys, it would be great to ask because you do go all year round.
Yeah.
So what do you guys do to help with ulcers?
We have NutriBac.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously Omeprazole.
So do you just do that on the weekends? No,
daily.
These ones we're hauling constantly. Mm-hmm. Like my Red as Hell, I'm just gonna give it to her.
It's expensive, but
one like her, she's gonna, anything I put in her so far, she's gonna give it back to me. So I'm not gonna hesitate.
Omeprazole is the only thing that truly gets rid of ulcers.
Yep.
Yes.
So like anything that we think might have ulcers gets Omeprazole, and then everyone else gets the NutriBac to prevent it.
And if she did, you know, I wouldn't give it to her. If I wouldn't haul her. If I was going to just be home for a month or two or whatever, you know, I probably wouldn't give it to her. But just where we're going almost every weekend, especially right now.
It's stressful.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
The last thing you want to do is make them not like their job.
Yeah.
Yep. And then what about nutrition?
It's called Right Choice Performance Pellet. It's made by Kalmbach, who makes Tribute.
Okay.
And we pay
right around $16.50, $17 a bag, and everything eats it, and they all look good. So.
What we look for in feed is the higher fat. And we also like to get feed alfalfa hay. I think that's important. So if you can get a hold of some good alfalfa hay, I think it's worth spending the money. And then you probably don't have to feed as much grain.
Yeah.
And so to me, grain's purpose is to add fat to their diet. If they're getting that good alfalfa, they're getting plenty of protein. So the protein that's in the feed is kind of a useless measurement, in my opinion. So when I go to look at the feed, I'm just looking at the fat. And what she's talking about, the feed we feed is a high fat.
I think it is 12% fat.
Gotcha.
And also, like, if the horse is in good shape, like good condition and stuff, and an easy keeper, you can not even feed it as much.
And I will say 98% at our house is 6 years old and under, so they need the fat. We're like, and like Regan's Kronk horse, he's 9. She like half the time just gives him a sprinkle.
Yeah.
You know, he doesn't need.
I feel like I'm starving the poor guy.
He doesn't need much. The hay's really good enough.
Yeah.
Well, that's that Star 67 horse got fat off air. And like literally you would give her a little nibble to make her happy. And like it was like that added 3 pounds every day.
And then what about Hot Topic Lasix? What's your guys' stance on that? Do you use it? Do you not sometimes?
Yes, we use it.
I love it.
I love it. Me too.
It works. I listened to a podcast, and then somebody said, like, if it's a fast horse, it's probably a bleeder. Like the podcast I listened to, it was the two vets that had done like the most research on Lasix, and they said like we keep breeding them for their lungs. Their lungs keep getting bigger,
heart.
Or their heart keeps getting bigger, and their lungs aren't. So like there's always a lot of pressure.
Oh, okay.
It's like the horses are doing more than their lungs can actually keep up with, almost, is what he was saying.
Yeah. And he said, like, I cannot remember the numbers, but it's like 95% bleed, but only 20-some percent of them actually bleed out the nose.
Right.
But once you scope them, they were bleeding.
Well, and, like, the Sox not having a Corona horse, he didn't really cough, sneeze, nothing. He never bled out his nose, but he stopped going in the alley. And, like, give him Lasix and he'll walk right in.
Yeah.
But, essentially to butcher that a little less, we've bred them to be fast, their hearts have gotten big, their lungs have stayed the same size, but Lasix is the only diuretic that they did in that research study that actually worked for bleeders.
I don't know, and then a lot of people ask me this, where I run poles and barrels, how do I do that?
Yeah.
And I kind of struggle with it. I've done different things. So sometimes you can run close together, and one dose of Lasix will cover both runs.
Yeah.
And so maybe that's the right thing to do. But then also, like this weekend, I didn't want to run within an hour apart, for example. I could have.
Yeah.
And I asked them not to. So I kind of tried something different. I'd never done it until this weekend, but I gave her I give them 5 cc's usually. That's my normal dose.
Yep.
So I did 2.5 in the morning when I ran poles, and then that night I gave her 2.5 again. And I have heard people do that.
Yeah.
Whether that's the right thing, I don't know, but it worked this weekend.
Right.
So
yeah.
I don't, you know.
Yeah, that's a good thought. I really didn't think about that where you run her.
It's tricky, and I do, and like, I kind of hate giving Lasix because you know it's dehydrating them, and I don't know, but it definitely works. They'll run harder on it, and you don't want them bleeding.
No. Yeah, the effects of them bleeding is way worse than what the drug is going
to
do.
And like red as hell, I don't think she's ever bled, but I don't want her to.
Right.
And it's cheap, you know, and so anyway, I just go ahead and give it to her.
Yeah, and people don't realize, like, the people that don't believe in Lasix, you know, or don't do it as a preventative, if you're behind the eight ball, then you're dealing with lung scar tissue and all of that stuff, and it it's just not worth it to me. So it's interesting to get your guys' opinion on that.
So what are, just, we'll just end this with, what are your all's plans for this year? I know you guys have a big year, so what are you guys excited about? What's coming up for you guys?
Bunch of fraternities.
Yeah, we've got a lot of fraternities coming
Some
up.
Local ones. We're going to the Kentucky 19 the first weekend of May. The next weekend, we're going to the Barrels for Badges, the Joe Trentman Memorial. And then we're going to Fort Smith, and then we're probably going to go to Gifford. There's another BFA fraternity then.
We'll see how we feel.
Yeah, we are going to go week by week. But there's a lot you can go to.
Yeah.
Gifford is the least money added and stuff. It's BFA, and something I've always wanted to do is win the BFA year end.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm leading the points, and this weekend helped me even more.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, I want to kind of chase some points a little bit. But if I feel like I'm in a good spot, which I feel like I am, so the Joe Trentman show is BFA.
Mm-hmm.
If I get points there and we go to Fort Smith and we get points there, I don't know if we'll go to Gifford, but, you know, because then I'll be in great shape if I have hit, you know, if I have gotten points. So anyway, that's something I've been thinking about. But we're just hitting those fraternities. I've never had a horse as good as I've got now. So I'm just, you know, trying to make the best of it. Yeah, for sure. And so I got to go.
Yeah.
I gotta go. And I may be a few years before I ever get a chance to be where I'm at. You know, this is the first time I've always wanted to win this. And I almost rode a little. I kind of thought I rode too conservative today. I was satisfied.
Right.
It's like she worked good, but I went in wanting to be clean.
Yeah.
And so yesterday I wanted to have a good fast run, and that's what happened, and that put me in a great position today. And so today I knew before I ran I was going to ride safe.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to be a little faster than I was, but anyway, but it worked out. And so I've never won this fraternity. I've been coming for several years. I've had some nice colts up here. I've gotten close a time or two, but so anyway, I'm tickled to finally win this one.
Yeah.
Been coming for a while, so anyway, just trying to make little achievements like that.
Yeah.
I got a chance now this year with my horse. I got a horse that can do it, so.
Well, he did tell us last weekend or weekend before that you told him he had to go. So he said, you have to go. You don't have a choice now.
I already entered you.
Yeah.
Too late.
So what about you? What are with your horses? You got goals? What are your...
By far, my favorite thing to do is run fraternity, so that will be the priority.
Mm-hmm.
I like running rodeos too, but that's kind of second hand to the young horses.
And mm-hmm.
I enjoy the three-year-olds and stuff, so that's where my focus will be.
Yeah. What about you?
On to the next one.
Consistency with my open horse, and my fraternity horse can tag along. But whenever they go to Gifford, I'm going to the Virginia Barrel Classic.
It's a different weekend.
All right, different weekend. But, so.
That's more
we'll
of
see.
A priority for you this year than fraternities.
Yeah. He'll come along when he comes along.
Yeah.
Well, guys, we appreciate you giving us your time very much. It was a fun conversation, and congrats to you guys. And we look forward to seeing you win some more this year. All of you.
Hope so. Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to our podcast, where we're not so rich,
not so famous,
but we're all trying to be.